Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I'm hoping that we can get through this to where I have a little luxury at the end of the show to talk about some things that might be illuminating, but not necessarily time-bound. In other words, we don't want to get into the news, but if we do actually end, this, how to take the party back, talking about the elephant in the room and controlling your public servants, if we can actually end today, then in our next episode, we can actually do some marketing, because I want to do a little transition of marketing here. Anyway, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this really is the only show that goes into academic evidence of what we need to do if we are going to save our liberties, our Constitution, our Republic, and our way of life. And if we're going to preserve those things for our children and our children's children and so forth and so on. And if we do this, then I believe we will be able to preserve liberty, not just for a few generations, but for a much longer time than we ever realized and the framers could have ever realized. And I say that because with the concept of Republic Review, it actually, if one proves to the states that their engagement in the process on a regular basis is critical, that they should be able to step in before bad things start to occur. So in other words, because we have the technology, they couldn't even fathom this. They could not fathom the concept of, as they were writing bills, that the states could actually see them simultaneously. Do you believe that the framers, with the level of technology we have today, they would not implement? They would probably go to more of a virtual government than the type of government we have that's hidden behind closed doors. You come out with these huge thousands of pages and say you got to read it. You got to pass it first to read it. I mean, I'm telling you, Pelosi would have been brought out to a firing squad and shot for saying that, because that is not a representative government. That's an autocracy, and that is it's communists. That's despotism. Anyway, let's move forward. We were talking about taking control. We're talking about the bylaws that you need to change, taking ownership of that seat, taking ownership of the label, putting these bylaws into place. We can talk about, if you're looking for the language and so forth, I'm happy to help. And as a matter of fact, these are the things that we need to do. So let me know. We submitted some bylaws in some of the states. And if you're interested in those, then great. But you need to have bylaw changes so that you actually take a legal position over those seats, over the name and everything else. This is why you also have to start educating so that they understand. You also have to start setting expectations for your politicians, so they know exactly what they need to do to be able to maintain that Republican name. If they think they can get elected without the party, by all means, they can go as an independent or become the other party. But I will guarantee you that as soon as somebody loses their affiliation to the party, they will not get elected in 90% of America that is party-bound districts. And when I say party-bound districts, those are the districts that always vote one way for a party, always, do or die. So the the intent is the county central committees need to begin holding education, not just for themselves. They need to open it up for the public. How else are we going to start educating people on the Constitution? And in doing so, they're going to start developing replacements. And this is really where we left off in our last episode. This educational process at the county level within the county central committees, they're now developing replacements amongst their PCOs, people that are already duly elected. This way, this education can start supporting the public servants and getting a constant replacement for public servants that want to wander or drift and don't think that they can be held accountable. I'll tell you what, the thought of not being held accountable will go out the window as soon as you hold them accountable. It may be a couple of folks, but it only takes one to be that example. And sometimes you may need to have two, three, or four, but after a while, they'll get it. They'll understand you mean business, and there's no wiggle room here. Anyway, as we move forward, the party needs to support the push for Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. What I mean by that is, if a party member, a party leader, not just a public servant, but anybody within the party, if they start supporting agendas and trying to get somebody in instead of trying to make sure that the best person is constitutional and understands that and is committed to that, and instead they want to have somebody that'll be accountable to somebody else for a different type of agenda, then that means that they're not supporting the Constitution, and that person needs to be removed and banned from the party, just like public service. Full education on the Constitution will be the foundation and the bond. This is why understanding the Constitution, and when I say understanding the Constitution, a party member, as well as a public servant, needs to understand the importance and the reason and the role of the militia. Why is it that we don't have a militia? Because nobody understands it. Nobody understands the brilliance in the design because they're not being taught this. In essence, what we are doing is simply cleaning up the Republican brand and then guarding it jealously so that we never lose the control over the Republican brand, because the Republican brand is going to be the bastion for the Constitution. It will be the guardian for our Constitution. It's one of the reasons why Article 6, Section 3 demands that we all take an oath in serving the Constitution. We're not supposed to be supporting a party. We're not supposed to be supporting a person, an office, the president, or what have you. We're supposed to be supporting the Constitution, not somebody's personal agenda. This is critical to being successful in reclaiming the Republic. If we are not guarding the brand, if we're not actually holding on to, these critical functions of the party, which are about the Constitution and not about agendas. As I've talked about the bylaws, holding the public servants accountable, so forth, by using Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, this is how we actually start controlling not just the public servants, but the party as well. You know what? I know that people are nice. And you know what? If somebody makes a mistake or what have you, as long as it's not too egregious, you can always give them a first and final. Well, this is your first warning and final. You make another mistake and you'll be gone. I believe in mercy, but I don't believe in constantly letting people get away with crap. And that's what rhinos are doing. They're constantly getting away with crap. All successful corporations, I want you to understand this, all successful corporations identify variances with analysis and adjust accordingly. So when you see these performance reports, you should, through analysis, be able to determine whether this person's really aligning with the Constitution or they're playing some shenanigans and involved in agendas. Then you deal with those variances by sending notices back from these performance reports and say, look, we see you're doing this. We want you to understand that is not fulfilling your oath and your obligation to the Constitution and the party. We don't care about, us being the party of giving away our future by handing out, entitlements and money and so forth. What we care about is preserving liberty. The party has to do this, whether you like it or not. And I want you to think about this, because people go, oh, the party, the party, the party, the party. if you really look at what we are talking about doing here, this actually moves the party into an obsolescence, or where the party becomes the only party. This is how Thomas Jefferson and James Madison monopolized in the party. By the time James Monroe became president, there was no other challenging party. He was unanimously elected, except for one person. And if you've listened to these episodes, or if you've listened to the show long enough, you've probably heard this a couple of times. This is how you change the relevance of necessarily the name and make the relevance on the Constitution, not necessarily the party. It would be great if all the parties act, because basically it becomes the merger. Everybody merges on the Constitution. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm okay with the Republican Party, once they have this domination, changing the name of the party to the Constitution Party. That would be, and I love the fact that the Constitution Party created that name, because it really should make the focus. But unfortunately, the Constitution Party, if you look at their platform and everything else, they've never really got it. They don't understand with full compliance. They didn't understand the auditing, this compact concept. They are now. And I know the president, or I should say, I know this national chair, Frank, over the Constitution Party. And I'd like to get him on the record for actually saying, I completely support Republic Review, but he's bound by relevance to the party. So anyway, when we come back, we'll try to do some final comments and so forth so we can wrap this up. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so as I was just saying, if you really look at successful corporations, they have full ownership of their culture. They have full ownership of their name, their label, their brand. And they guard those things, their culture and their brand, jealously. They do not let anybody tarnish their brand. And so, you know, it's like, what do you do when, you know, all of a sudden your brand has been diminished or tarnished? I mean, that means you're just going to start losing money. And it is antithetical to any corporation to allow itself to lose money. So they have to be they have to have processes and checks in place to ensure that they have protected their brand. The party can do the same thing, keeping focus on keeping the brand clean and operate on the principal foundation. What is that principal foundation, folks? It's the Constitution. So focusing on the brand and that foundation, that principal foundation, the Constitution, that becomes the brand. That's why I honestly see that this would eventually migrate as the party starts becoming the monopoly and saying, you know what? And you know, you're going to win the argument. You'll win the argument with the Libertarians, the Constitution Party, all of the different parties out there, except for the parties that have maniacal agendas that they want to undermine and destroy our Constitution and our liberties. This is the land of liberty, and I believe America will wake up when we actually have the honest dialogue in front of the American people. There is no doubt in my mind the majority of the American people will see having liberty is far better. Just because kids have been indoctrinated in thinking that guns are the problem and not the education system and the morals and so forth, these kids are clueless. But once you start having the honest dialogue, you win the argument. You will win the argument and you will prevail, and we will be able to preserve liberty. It's really that simple, and that's how I see it. Anyway, here is probably the best kept secret regarding our Constitution. As you understand, and anybody that has listened to this particular show, anybody that's read my work, it really comes down to this. What type of Constitution do we have? Well, now, there are only two types of constitutions. There's a general constitution and an enumerated constitution. And as soon as we start putting things into that perspective, everybody's light bulb goes on. It's just like Mr. Iredell's referring to the Constitution as a power of attorney. Is it a general power of attorney or a general constitution? Or is it an enumerated, a listed and defined powers? You can do this and only this. And bottom line, everybody will get it. Oh, well, shoot. Yeah, we don't have general powers. We have enumerated powers and we can only do this. The only thing that starts twisting things are those four mystical clauses. And this is why the ratification debates are so important. So people understand not only that these mystical clauses, you know, aren't necessarily portals, but they actually get the fact that the enumerated powers, not any of these general clauses or preambles or what have you, the enumerated powers are the limitations of jurisdiction. If it's not an enumerated power within the Constitution or an amendment, then you can't do it. You can't meddle with it. So this is how we have to start teaching people to start thinking. It's a contract. It has listed powers, and those are the only things they can do. The Constitution must be, moving forward, the Constitution must be our weapon and our shield. And if we use it in that manner, we're going to win. We will win. You know, if anybody, and again, I say this, if anybody that wants to challenge the veracity of my position, our position on this, let me know. I'd be happy to have the honest dialogue. I love finding somebody, you know, from a really, they think they're a conservative because they are part of this conservative organization. And then when they start arguing the issues, they find out that they're actually they're in the wrong position. Because they don't understand, because they haven't been taught, and those organizations aren't teaching them the full thing. I look at some of these organizations kind of like Catholicism within Christianity. They only teach certain aspects of the Bible. I mean, how many Catholics do you see go to church with a Bible in their hands and discuss from cover to cover the entire Bible? Why is that? Well, because they only want them to understand these very certain tenets, these very certain things, Well, they're busy. They don't have to understand everything. We're just making it simple. No, this is about thought control. This is about not letting you know about these other concepts. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you, almost every Christian church omits parts of the Bible. There's certain parts that they do not want to talk about, and there's reasons for it because it goes against their position that they've decided to take. That's why all these different Christian churches, you know, have, what's the best way to say it? They have their own interpretation. That's the whole point of religions, right? Especially when it became a profession. And this is why we have these deviations. This is why Martin Luther had these grievances and wanted to move the church into a more true function. Did he get it? No, he didn't. And as a matter of fact, Martin Luther even said himself that he was not able to perfect the church, but he wanted to get it into a position that it was more accurate in reflecting the doctrines of the gospel. Interesting, right? Anyway, it's not about, you know, I don't want to get into a sermon, but the point is that when we start actually using the entire Constitution and we don't omit the militia parts, we don't omit certain parts, then people actually start understanding the full context of why they even exist. It's the same thing with reading your scriptures and reading the founding documents. If you want to understand what that document means, you have to read the founding documents, the ratification debates. What I want to kind of get back to is you, the person. Why is it that you should join the party? Because you can actually make a change. I don't know a person yet out there that actually wanted to join the party so they could knock on doors and hand people pamphlets. I don't know anybody that really wants to do that. I know people that want to and join the party so that they can actually be an instrument in changing the party for the better. Are we out to maintain status quo in keeping the seats wide open and allowing politicians all the latitude necessary to compromise our Constitution and discard it? Or are we going to start ensuring that those people we put into place that should be guarding our liberty and our Constitution actually do that? Because that's what the oath is for, is to guard our liberties and our Constitution. I believe that you and most people join the political process to become political warriors and leaders. I believe good patriots want to be an active part in promoting the party, and the party especially that they believe in, because it supposedly aligns with their values on a general sense. This is, you know, the life party. This is the party of morals. This is the party of good. Yes, absolutely. But it doesn't become the true party of good until it actually starts supporting liberty. And in doing that, it has to be supporting the Constitution, because the Constitution is the only document that guarantees liberty for all. I believe people want to be a part of the solution. And that's why you see organizations like the Tea Party Express, and all of these different flavors from the anti-Obama, the anti-Clinton eras. This is why you see these upticks in these types of organizations, because people really want to be a part of the solution. They recognize that something's rotten in Denmark and that we need to do something immediately. So they get this, they go out and they form these parties, these factions. No, what we need to do is we need to unite on the Constitution, friends. It's not about creating some snappy name, Tea Party, taxed enough already. I mean, though they're nice, but aren't we tired of being duped? Aren't we tired of being used by these people that are serving themselves? This is why the party must hold post-election meetings and go through the winners and identify who's representing them, and then keep tabs, always holding regular meetings, looking at the status reports and saying, okay, you know what? This may take time. You may not have to even do this in a meeting. This could be done either virtually in a Zoom meeting or a Skype meeting, or this could be even done in email space. But you have to do it. You have to hold those who are now representing your brand accountable. Just remember, my friends, failing to plan is planning to fail. And the establishment in the Uniparty understands this. This is why they don't want you to have a plan. This is why they don't want you to have this level of focus and control on the Constitution. This is why they want you to have all the latitude, or give your politicians all the latitude necessary, so that the perverse undermining of the Constitution can continue. Believe it or not, the parties have been corrupted, and the Uniparty is corrupting both parties. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
All right. Well, congratulations. We actually completed really what I wanted to talk about. You have basically the outline. I can put this outline up into a PowerPoint or PDF format, if you're interested in it, so that if you want to actually start, you know, creating a strategy for your central committee, or how to change the fundamentals of your central committee so that you can fundamentally change who is representing you, and moving forward, how you're constantly preparing everybody to be able to step up and fulfill the positions of public service. I know we all have a lot going on, but you know what? As I said, if we don't have a plan, then we're going to fail. It's that simple. Anyway, but what I want to do is, instead of getting into some of the news and something else, what I want to do is I want to kind of reinforce the importance of the ratification debates. You hear me say this all the time. The ratification debates is how the Constitution was defined. We should not be allowing the Supreme Court to redefine it in a way it was never defined. We should never have allowed Marshall. So, you know, Marshall conducted some of this crap, his opinions and everything else. This all fell to Madison's feet, Jefferson's feet, and so forth. Why didn't they say something? Why didn't they say, hey, you can't, you know, you can't be saying those things because that's contrary to how the Constitution was defined. At the time, rulings meant nothing because precedents didn't exist within the Constitution. There was either, it was either within the contract or not in the contract. So the rulings were the only thing that was important. And I'm confident that if Madison read the rulings, it was just basically he looked at it as an opinion and nothing more. It had no standing and no relevance. It was just an opportunity for a judge to editorialize his views on the issue itself. But it had no standing. You have to understand that. It had no standing. Why? Because I'm going to read to you a letter from James Madison to John George Jackson. This was back in 1821. So, in other words, this is after Marshall's rulings and so forth. And for the most part, when you look at Marshall's rulings, he was spot on. You know, the ruling with Marbury v. Madison, or actually not Marbury v. Madison, that was an overreach, and they know that was an overreach. And they failed to go to Congress. And I tell you, the reason why I think Jefferson failed and I think Madison failed was because they were actually more concerned with the real big problem of their people being oppressed, them not having, I mean, we were just getting our legs as a country and we had three foreign powers that were in our knickers trying to undermine us. So the problem du jour was not necessarily the bench overreach on jurisdiction. Anyway, the Maryland v. McCulloch case, you know, these things, the rulings were right. It's just the opinions created footings that when they perverted the Constitution into establishing and utilizing precedents and case law, not common law, case law, then what ended up happening is that these comments by Marshall helped them actually start expounding upon all of these things that they should never have done. And so, and what I mean by that is he never should have said that we could do anything necessary and proper as long as the government feels it's necessary. I mean, some of his opinions were violently conflicted his own statements during the ratification debates. And this is what I go through when I read the ratification debates and Marshall's statements. Because even Marshall said that the federal government was constrained to the jurisdiction of the enumerated powers. If it's outside their enumerated powers, they have no jurisdiction over those things and they will consider the laws void. I mean, so he was consistent with everybody else in context to the Constitution. So here's what Madison said to John George Jackson. And again, this is December 27th, 1821. With respect to that portion of the mass which contains the voluminous proceedings of the convention, it has always been my intention that they should someday or other see the light. But I have always felt at the same time the delicacy attending such a use of them, especially at an early season. In general, I have learned that the expediency of letting the publication be a posthumous one, in other words, after he died, the result of my latest reflections on the subject, I cannot more conveniently explain than by the enclosed extract from a letter, one confidentially written since the appearance of the proceedings of the convention as taken from the notes of Chief Justice Yates. Of this work, I have yet to see a copy from the scraps thrown into the newspapers. I cannot doubt that the prejudices of the author guided his pen. That's so common, folks. Even Madison had his biases or his prejudices guide his pen as well, and that he has committed egregious errors, at least in relation to others as well as to myself. The most of us carried into the convention a profound impression produced by the experienced inadequacy of the old Confederation and by the monitory examples of all samples of all similar ones, ancient and modern, as to the necessity of binding the states together by a strong constitution is certain. The necessity of such a constitution was enforced by the gross and disreputable inequities which had been prominent in the internal administrations of the states, and I'm inserting here, of the Articles of Confederation. Nor was the recent and alarming insurrection headed by the Shays in Massachusetts without a very sensible effect on the public mind. Such indeed was the aspect of things that in the eyes of all the best friends of liberty, a crisis had arrived which was to decide whether the American experience or experiment was to be a blessing to the world or to blast forever the hopes which the Republican cause had inspired, and what is not to be overlooked in the disposition to give a new system all the vigor consistent with Republican principles was not a little stimulated by a backward in some quarters towards a convention for the purpose which was ascribed to a secret dislike of popular government and a hope that delay would bring it more into disgrace and pave the way for a former government more congenial with monarchical and aristocratical predilections. So in other words, he actually saw that the direction wasn't going to be going down the path. You have to understand, and we talked about this, that right after the convention or the ratification of the Constitution was put forth, because it was all about the Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights, the Bill of Rights, and they really wanted to see this, because the Federalists, who really showed their hand after the Constitution was signed, they started moving down this path of a monarchical, because they wanted George Washington to serve for life. Hamilton wanted a monarch. These hands started actually being thrown onto the table. Actually, Hamilton played his hand during the convention. And if you read his speech that he gave at that convention, he says he doesn't agree with what they're doing, but that doesn't mean anything, because bottom line is that this is, you know, this is a necessary vehicle so that down the road he can hopefully implement his monarchy that he wanted to create, this single aristocratical type of government. He was an Anglophile. He loved the British monarchy. Anyway, moving on, as Madison kind of points out to the crisis, the view of the crisis made it natural for many in the convention to lean more than was perhaps in strictness warranted by a proper distinction between causes temporary, as to some of them doubtless were, and causes permanently inherent in popular frames of government. It is true also, as has been in times suggested, that in the course of discussions in the convention, where so much depended on compromise, the patrons of different opinions often set out on negotiating grounds more remote from each other than the real opinions of either were from the point at which they finally met. For myself, having the first moment of maturing a political opinion down to the present one, never ceased to be a votary of the principle of self-government. I was among the most anxious to rescue it from the danger which seemed to threaten it, and with that view was willing to give a government resting on the foundation as much energy as would be in, well, we'll just have to read this back when we come back from the break. I apologize, so we'll kind of take it off for myself. But this is a really important letter, and we're getting to the resonating message that Madison basically echoes what I've been telling you. And this is why I tell you this. We'll be right back after these promos. Thank you so much.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so listen to what Madison says here. For myself, having from the first moment of maturing a political opinion down to the present one, never ceased to be a votary of the principle. In other words, since his very beginning, as his political aspirations and views on government, they had always been centered on self-government, the votary of the principle of self-government. Self-government. That means when you understand what self-government means, the militia and having we the people enforcing the laws of the Constitution, that is the ultimate. That is the ultimate in self-government. There has yet to be this level of a model. Maybe, you know, in Athens, Greece, there were some, but it wasn't necessary. It wasn't even close to what we have today regarding liberty. I was among those most anxious to rescue it from the danger which seemed to threaten it. And with that view, was willing to give a government resting on that foundation, a self-government, as much energy as would ensure the requisite stable and efficacy. It is possible that in some instances, this consideration may have been allowed a weight greater than subsequent reflection within the convention, or the actual operation of the government would sanction. It would be remarked also that it sometimes happened that opinions as to the particular modification or a particular power of the government had a conditional reference to others, which combined therewith would vary the character of the whole. This is the killer part right here, and this is what you need to really hear and listen. but whatever have been the opinions entertained in forming the Constitution, it was the duty of all to support it in its true meaning as understood by the nation at the time of its ratification. I'm going to stop and editorialize here. What he just said was, even regardless of what everybody's opinions were during the Constitutional Convention of what this thing meant, it didn't matter. The only thing that mattered, and as he said, and as he puts it, it was the duty of all to support it in its true meaning as understood by the nation. In other words, how it was sold to the American people in each state's ratification debates, how those delegates heard it and had been sold to them, that they voted for it, how they understood it at that point in time is the only thing that matters regarding the Constitution and its true meaning. No one felt this obligation more than I have done, and there are few, perhaps, whose ultimate and deliberate opinions on the merits of the Constitution accord in a greater degree with that obligation. The departures from the true and fair construction of the instrument, he's talked about the Constitution, have always given me pain and always experienced my opposition when called for. The attempts in the outset of the government to defeat those safe, if not necessary, and those politic, if not obligatory amendments introduced in conformity to the known desires of the body of the people. In other words, giving the amendments, such as the Bill of Rights and whatever necessary amendments as the people, you know, demanded, and to the pledges of many, particularly myself, when vindicating and recommending the Constitution, was an occurrence not a little ominous. There's the word, ominous. Was an occurrence not a little ominous. And it was soon followed by indications of political tenets and by rules, or rather the abandonment of all rules of expounding it, which were capable of transforming it into something very different from its legitimate character as the offspring of the national will. So he's basically saying that he's actually seeing that these rules, or actually the abandonment of the rules and expounding upon it, were capable and had been transforming. So I think Madison at this point in 1821 was recognizing how Marshall, with his rulings and stepping away from the guidelines and the strict understanding of enumerated powers, how Marshall was aggrandizing the government in his opinions. I wish I could say that constructive innovations had altogether ceased. Whether the Constitution, as it has divided the powers of government between the states in their separate and in their united capacities, tends to an oppressive aggrandizement of the general government, or to an anarchical independence of the state governments, is a problem which time alone can absolutely determine. It is much to be wished that the division as it exists, or as it may be made with the regular sanction of the people, may effectually guard against both extremes. For it cannot be doubted that the accumulation of all power in the general government would as naturally lead to a dangerous accumulation in the executive hands as that of the resumption of all powers to the several states would end to in the calamities incident to the contiguous and rival sovereigns, to say nothing of its effect in lessening the security for sound principles of administration within each of them. There have been epochs when the general government was evidently drawn a disproportionate power into its vortex. There have been others when states threatened to do the same. At the present moment, it WD, whatever that means, seems, it would seem, okay, it would seem that both are aiming at encroachments each on each other. One thing, however, is certain, that in the present condition, the temper of the community of the general government cannot long succeed in encroachments contravening the will of the majority of the states. And I think it was about this time when Madison actually started forecasting that he saw the demise of the Constitution within the next 50 years. I believe it was in the Virginia Convention, just a few years after this, where he actually made that prediction, because he saw that there was this conflict between the sovereignty of the states and the consuming powers of the general government and of the people, and just going on, and of the people. Its responsibility, Madison goes on and says, its responsibility to these as was proved by the conspicuous occasion, quickly arrest its career. If at all this time the powers of the general government be carried unconstitutional lengths, it will be the result of a majority of the states and people actuated by some impetuous feeling or some real or supposed interest overruling the minority, and not of successful attempts by the general government to overpower both. In estimating the greater tendency in the political system of the Union and subversion of the separation of the states composing it, there are some considerations to be taken into account which had been little adverted to the most oracle authors of the science of government, and which are imperfectly developed as yet by our own experience. Such are the size of states, the number of them, the territorial extent of the whole, and the degree of external danger. See, it was the external danger that they were dealing with, which really kept it hard for them to do some things that they needed to do. Moving on, each of these, I am persuaded, will be found to contribute to impulse to the practical direction which our great political machine is to take. We learn for the first time the second law sustained by your parental affections. You will not doubt the sincerity with which we partake the grief both produced by both. I wish we could offer better consolations than the condoling expression of it. These must be derived from other sources. Afflictions of every kind on the onerous conditions charged on the tenure of life, and it is silencing, if not satisfactory vindication of the ways of heaven to man, that there may be but few who do not prefer an acquiescence in them to surrender of the tenure itself. We have but a great part of the last and present years, much sickness in our own family among the black members, if it had not been a morality. Mrs. Madison Payne were unfortunate to escape altogether. And they talked about the typhoid disease and so forth, and he got into the personal side. The most important part of this letter, and I want to reread this, but whatever might have been the opinions entertained in forming the Constitution, it was the duty of all to support it in its true meaning as understood by the states at the time of its ratification. That's the one thing you need to take away from this one letter, that the ratification debates is that important, that they are the foundation of what that document means. So don't tell me that you can actually extrapolate from reading the document and reading opinions what that Constitution means. It will never jive with what those ratification debates state, and that's why, if you want to really understand, and this is what we have to use for our education system in the parties as well, we have to start leaning upon the ratification debates and how it defined the Constitution if we want to be accurate in supporting the Constitution. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.